Don't worry about your feet stinking. It's a nursery. Oh, well. Get in fellowship. We continue on here in regards to the tenet of doctrine. Paul makes very clear that was repetitively taught to this local church, that if anyone will not work, the admonition is neither let him eat. And the imperative is directed towards any who otherwise might try to provide assistance for someone not willing to work. The tenet itself finds this foundation in regards to not working, you ultimately will starve to death. In regards to God's judgment placed upon mankind due to the fall. And as I brought out, this gives us spiritual parallels that we can draw upon in this respect, as those who are disobedient to this particular doctrine reflect negative volition, unwilling to orient to the judgment placed upon mankind by God, and avail themselves in regards to God's directive will as to that which is necessary in order for them to sustain life. And they, in turn, are contrasted to positive volition that is modeled by Team Paul, who is oriented to the principle of sacrifice, which obviously provides relief in regards to the judgment otherwise brought upon men. So the dictum, the truism stated, obviously does away with the idea of welfare in regards to a socialistic type of approach to mankind. The judgment is applied across the board to all men, believers and unbelievers alike. And point 29, page 24, again, while the cosmos may bypass the will of God through socialism and other humanitarian fronts, Bible doctrine makes it clear that believers are to refuse assistance to those not willing to work. Again, you have the attitude, people who are emotional wrecks in their life are not able to control their emotions. The bleeding hearts, as we might refer to them, of society, that you help no matter the situation, is completely erroneous. And it is not doctrinally in line. In this respect, as one might fall into this category, the church itself would deny them living grace assistance as long as they sustained and pursued this course in life. And so it should be in regards to society in and of itself and in general. Obviously, we recognize if there is work unavailable, and those who may fall short, even though they are working. And for those things, obviously, there is no argument in regards to not helping. But those who simply want to live a welfare life because they don't want to work, I've even heard excuses that people can make more money on welfare than actually working a menial minimum wage job, whatever. Well, society brings their own sufferings upon themselves by promoting programs such as this rather than doing what's necessary to create work as a government and things of this nature. And with all the money they pour into social programs, nobody would need to be out of work, really, if the government would utilize it in a way to create work and jobs otherwise. But anyway, so divine viewpoint differs greatly in regards to human viewpoint in this area. So 30, where we left off, it is the will of God for us to work to sustain our life, and Paul is in complete agreement with him. Again, to keep it clear, we're not dealing with bona fide living grace. We're not dealing per se with children under the dependency of a parent living at home, unless they're old enough to work and provide for themselves and help support, or a wife staying at home, not working, if the family can financially afford that. Obviously, if not, it may be that the wife does have to work. Unfortunately, in our society, it's become bad enough with inflation and everything else that is part of the judgment of the evil that our society is conjuring up continuously in history, that both spouses have to work just to make ends meet. But obviously, those who are not willing to work at all and is simply to put food on their table to provide, as we would say, living grace, a roof over their head, these people are completely out to lunch doctrinally and are to be denied assistance. 31, the first class conditional phrase, if anyone will not work, I tis u thelo ergazomai, assumes a believer falls into this category. It takes those who will be in this category, and it further assumes that there will be those that do fall into this category, as there is here at Thessalonica. So 32, the negative verb will not is literally, in the Greek, is not wishing or wanting, our verb thelo, to wish, to want, and it points to these being less than motivated to establish this priority and illustrates negative volition. Negative volition is a will, a soul not willing to come to terms and make a determination and decision for the right thing. So 33, now the motivation believers are to provide in application is set forth in the imperative phrase to let them go hungry, neither let him eat. The imperative, neither let him eat, made a estio, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, if you missed it. That's the motivation. If they're not going to line up with that, they're a lost cause. Truly. And why nobody likes to see that, you know, that's just the way it is. So, and that definitely, this all pictures negative volition perfectly. So 34, this admonition is one of the role imperatives. We have a doctrine of role imperatives, and this would be included among them. Those things that God says for us to do or don't do. At 35, to assist the unruly believer pursuing a life, eventuating and sending to death, is not the prescription here. And that's exactly what it would lead to. Someone is that recalcitrant, that obstinate, in regards to performing God's one primary dictum of life existence to work, deserves sending to death. See, they deserve it because God will provide the living grace necessary for them to have the sweat of their brow, to eat their bread. So to assist the unruly believer pursuing a life, eventuating and sending to death, is not the prescription here. Now, it's that old attitude, that old fundy attitude of catering to people who are negative for the sake of emotions, numbers in churches, money, all other types of selfish type of motivations included. So 36, rather apart from repentance, a change of mind, quote, you're on your own, end quote, is the mantra of the adjusted. People call, want assistance from the church. One of the first questions you ask, are you working? No, why? And then you get the ear full of that. Come this time of the year, I generally just let the answer machine pick it up. You never know. They come out of the woodwork all over the place. See, in this regard. so we recognize that around here, and we follow that type of procedure. And it is to apply even to our own in this regards. And if it's applied to our own, why wouldn't we do the same for any outside assistance that might present itself? So there's one for you to chew on in regards to life itself, taking the attitude, you don't want to align with doctrine, you're on your own. You don't want to be part of the Sound of Justice local church, you're on your own. Don't expect help from me. I'm not going to cater to that. See? That's a far cry from the lukewarm approach you find out there in the funding world, who wants to embrace and hug it and hold everybody. See? Oh, you dear poor brother. And give them all kinds of excuses for why they are spiritual derelicts, why they are negative to doctrine. So 37, the effect of this saying here, the effect of the saying is to establish the honor of honest labor over against any notion that some might feel that they were excluded from the obligation to provide for themselves. On the more logical front, an experiential front in regards to this, it points to the principle of working for a living, honest labor. And any attitude that takes exception to that otherwise. So 38, the verse is a relevant part of biblical teaching on the matter, but should not exclude other biblical teaching regarding living grace, as I have tried to keep before us to maintain the proper balance of what's being dealt with here. So 39, the saying itself is primarily directed to the lazy, as a warning against idleness or the obstinate. They may not be lazy in regards to they're out doing things all the time, but they're not supporting themselves and they're looking for handouts in order to do what they're doing and to sustain their lives. See? It's amazing how hard the STA will work in order to avoid fine doctrine. This is another good example. So 40, it is unwillingness to work rather than lack of opportunity about provision for the unemployed. 41, it must be balanced by teaching on the necessity of giving aid to those that are in need. We have that requirement. Otherwise, so there is a balance that is to be struck in regards to doctrine. And this doctrine is to be taken within its immediate context in balance with, in conjunction with, other doctrines to apply help. James 2, James makes that clear in his epistle. If a brother, verse 15, if a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm, be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Bringing out the principle of providing living grace is necessary. So, again, to correctly apply doctrine in the Christian life demands discernment. It demands a frame of reference in regards to doctrine and all aspects of it. To put these things together to make sure we do strike the right balance, maintain the right intentions, right motivation, and right application in each individual circumstance and situation as it presents itself in that regard. So 42, Paul is addressing here professional loafers that work hardest at avoiding work. Like I had mentioned earlier on, one commentary says, look, a hippie commune all the way back then. So 43, there is dignity in all honest labor. To zero in the proper perspective in regards to your individual responsibility as sustenance in life. There is dignity in all honest labor. All legitimate work is honorable. And any job carried out under a divine viewpoint glorifies God and produces divine good. You see this under attack, and it's something that's been undermined and promoted, again, within our own society, as part of the arguments in regards to immigration. Well, nobody else will go out and pick fruit. Nobody else will pick cotton. See? Well, fine. Let them starve to death if that's the only work they can get and support themselves otherwise. See? Now, all this is nothing but human viewpoint to create confusion, to misappropriate doing the right things in life otherwise. All work, legitimate work, is honorable. And if you do it as unto the Lord, you will be rewarded for it, and God will bless you. Ephesians 6, 5, and 8, we are given the commands of the proper mental attitude and approach in regards to working. Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 8, slaves, and we can apply this in regards to being an employee. Be obedient to those who are your masters, those who have authority over you, according to the flesh, in this real world of ours, with fear and trembling. Fear and trembling, first and foremost, recognizing God appoints all authority, even the bad ones. God's in control of this. And that authority is over you for a reason, because God has him there. And if this is your work, this is your job, well, that's part of your test in life. And part of your spiritual matriculation is orientation to that. Fear and trembling. Your job is going to contain the time in life that produces a big chunk or loss of your SG3. See? Another reason why it should be approached with fear and trembling. In the sincerity, continue in verse 5, of your heart as to Christ. Recognizing what God expects of the believer in orientation and acclimation to their civil authorities on the job. Not by way of eye service. As men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. To be, as we would say, a brown noser. To put a facade on when the boss is around to act busy. When he's off, you're screwing around and goofing off otherwise. Constantly running around and interfering with other people's responsibilities and working on a job. You see that. See. Bad-mouthing the boss. Bad-mouthing the company. You don't like it? Move on. This is a free society. I don't know if they had the law here in Ohio. Oklahoma has employee will law. Employer can fire a person for whatever reason they want. It's your choice to work there, and it's their choice to hire you. They don't like you, bye. See, but yet you had the bleeding heart liberals trying to undo that. The unions are a big enemy to that, obviously, approach. And why? One reason why unions are evil. But you're stuck with them. That's the way it goes. The only way you can find work, that's where you find work. And you endure. You take captive every thought for Christ and all the other things associated in regards to having to work in a society that is dominated by human viewpoint evil. Colossians 3:23. So, to do your work as to Christ. Get in fellowship. Pray about it. And do the best you can do without trying to ingratiate yourself other than wanting to do a good job for your boss. See. Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, do your work heartily. That's with zeal, with the right mental attitude. See. As for the Lord rather than for men. And obviously work can be a test. Not everybody has a job like mine that they just love every minute of it. See, you can't stand being away from work. See, that's my job. Wow, you're looking at me like I'm serious. Come on. Give me a break here. No, we all have our tests. See, I just happen to have the best boss in the world. So, you know, doing your work as for the Lord rather than for men. Again, as part of growing up spiritually, God has you there for a reason. And testing produces patience. In turn, that is enhancing your maturity adjustment and your perseverance throughout that. Validates how positive you are. See, that's the doctrine to go with it. And it doesn't make any difference what kind of job it may be. 44, the believer that works even a low-paying job unto the Lord and honors the Lord with his income will be blessed more than the one that rejects this responsibility. Proverbs 3, 9, and 10. As one works, God blesses their efforts as they do it unto the Lord. They in turn make the application of giving necessary to support their spiritual advance through that ministry, today the local church, etc. And God prospers. You never know what kind of test God may put you in. I can fall back on my own experiences. I was working full-time in a job that you would think, you know, you'd never be in need of want. But still found myself short. And I was offered a job working part-time, and I looked at what they were going to pay, and I thought, well, that's not going to make my ends meet, but that's why God opened, so I took it. And it was amazing. Immediately, my financial problems just seemed to disappear. And I still shake my head. You know, or scratch my head over that. You know, how in the world did he do this? How did he make this work? Just things just happened. The dollar was being stretched. Other expenses that might have been there disappeared. Things of that nature. So, you know, if you're not willing to apply the doctrine, you'll never get to experience what God's grace has for you. It's like, you know, the old adage, if you don't ever play the lottery, you'll never win. See? If you don't apply God's doctrine, you'll never see that doctrine, the impact it's designed to have in your life. And the problem with the SCA and the negative volition in general is that they do all things to avoid that doctrine and want to engage in energy of the flesh and do it on their own. All right, back to our point here. Proverbs 3, 9 and 10. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. So your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. It doesn't mean that it happens overnight. Sometimes it takes time. God will test you with patience to endure. Again, look at Job, who is example extraordinaire in regards to patience and waiting on God. What he had, what he lost, and then what God gave him again. See? So, Proverbs 3:45, we are not to be arrogant about our rights, talents, worth, etc. But remain humble and be willing to take what God offers as it is necessary to provide our living grace. Again, you're down to a point where maybe you can't maintain your profession. You can't truly satisfy the academic degree what it supposedly is to provide for you in that regards. You need food on the table. and another job opens that's not the avenue that you want to take, and it's what's available. Well, if it means putting food on the table, I advise you to take that job. And then let God work it out. See? Let God work it out. I've been there before too. Left good paying positions, get hooked into doctrine, and in order to put food on my own table, take a lesser job. And it wasn't long before God started advancing me once again in my life employment. So you can't become arrogant. Our society promotes this kind of arrogance. There's going to be too many examples at the Bema seat that are going to put this type of attitude down in regards to their SG3. You never know how God may take you in your in directional life. Again, one of the a good example that I can drop on all of us is Chris O'Leary. I mean, he left a profession of being a teacher. And when he went to Maranatha, God gave him a teaching job immediately. He was there. It was open. It was ready to go. Then he took the church in Texas. That screwed his life up. I say that tongue-in-cheek. But he took it. He gave up his profession to teach people doctrine. And they didn't want to support him. And people started appealing. And of course, he just had to shut it down. It's not fair to place upon two or three people to support a pastor. That's just stupidity. That is selfishness. Deluxe, if you ask me. Yeah. And he came back to Oklahoma City to get back under Bible class, and he could not get a teaching job to save his life. So he's been working two jobs since I've known him, coming back at places that people might frown upon otherwise. Yeah. Even though they're not bad jobs. And God's sustaining, he's maintaining, and prospered and advancing in the field he's in now. You want to know what those are? You can talk to him yourself. But he does this because, first and foremost, his responsibility to his family. Second of all, he's not willing to compromise his NPR to do something else that might otherwise take him out of Bible class. So he took what God gave him. And it's amazing. He was able to buy a house. He and Nick was able to buy a house when they were there for seminary, and he had his teaching job. Came back, he was in a position where, oh, good grief, they'll never be able to afford another house. Now he owns another house. God still brought that in his lap. Dropped that in his lap. Just dropped it in his lap. I'm telling you, these are great examples to look at. See, now, I'm not saying that's the way it is for everybody. But it definitely shows how God can and will intercede on behalf of a believer that keeps their doctrinal priorities straight. And it didn't happen overnight. See? So, you never know. 46, this does not short-circuit the pursuit of professionalism or academia while maintaining our NPR. Obviously, that should be one of our priorities, being in Bible class. But does call to task those not willing to accept lesser employment when faced with the issue of putting food on the table becoming a burden upon others. Digging ditches. See, I wouldn't dig ditches. Well, fine, starve to death. And again, James 4:13 through 17 is the passage that deals with abandoning the NPR just to prosper. That's not about putting food on the table. That's about making more money. See, compromising doctrine over money, and abandoning God's geographical and pastoral will in the process. So, obviously, there's nothing wrong in trying to better oneself, to educate oneself in regards to certain professions, in regards to schooling, etc. But if God puts you in a test where that kind of work's not available, well, now you have a different situation. So 47, stay-at-home wives also have a job to do and shouldn't piddle their time sitting around eating bonbons and watching soap operas. I just didn't want the women to feel left out. for those who get to stay at home. There's other women here who will go, wow, that's nice. And I don't know of any problems like that around here, but still you exhort. You never know who might get a hold of the tape. So 48, you don't wait for the lottery in order to buy groceries. Neither do you pass up gainful employment when the same need exists. Forty-nine. Remember Proverbs 6:6-11. Well, it's some verses to finish off in exhortation for us here. The lesson that can be learned from lower creations such as the ant. Ants constantly working. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise. The sluggard being the lazy, one who is idle. Which, having no chief, officer, or ruler, there's not another ant that's an authority over an ant. They just knew this instinctively. Prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little fall in the hands of rest. And your poverty will come in like a vagabond. And your need like an armed man. Proverbs 13:4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing. Always fantasizing. I want this, want that. But it never happens. You got to work for these things. But the soul of the diligent is made fat. Those who get out and engage in work will reap the benefits of their labor. 15:19. The way of the sluggard is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. 19:24. All these in Proverbs. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. Now that's lazy. Chapter 20, verse 4. The sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. Chapter 21, verses 25 through 26. The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. All day long he is craving, while the righteous gives and does not hold back. How God prospers those willing to line up with the principle of working. 22:13. The sluggard says, there is lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets rather than going out and doing something about it. See? Has no initiative. That's what he's, that proverb is pointing to. 22:13. 24:30-34. I passed by the field of the sluggard, the lazy, and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Doesn't have their life organized, using common sense, logic. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles. And the stone wall was broken down. Just completely run down, unfit for any type of production. When I saw it reflected upon it, I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little falling in the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and you want like an armed man. You start getting into that type of habit. Next thing you know, you'll be hurting. And then 26:14-16. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. You ever sleep too much and you find yourself turning over from right to left, because you can't really go to sleep, a good night's sleep. Working gives you and exhausts your body physically so you can sleep good. It's part of the benefits of it, to get good sleep along with a good conscience and all these other things. I sit there and I have to put up with Ann turning back and forth like a door every night. No, I'm kidding. She puts up with me probably. 50, those, to finish this off, those commissioned in roles of authority to administer the Living Grace Ministry of a local church should monitor closely any that are chronic in the request for aid. And we have a good, well-balanced system to doctrinal system to look at in regards to making provision for Living Grace in that respect. So I don't know really of any instance where we've had to say, well, go get a job. Maybe you need to go get another job or whatever, but other than that. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and just let you go this morning a little early, and we'll pick this up Tuesday evening. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light and see these things in Jesus' name. Amen.